Thanks for joining us on the Port City Church podcast. More information about Port City Church is available at portcitychurch.org.
Good morning. So glad to be together this morning. This is really what this series is about. It's an invitation to imagine. I think a lot of us, if we're honest, we sort of lost sight of what it means to imagine or to use our imaginations. It's something we did when we were kids. We used crayons and such. And as we get older, the imagination sort of gets beat out of us. So I want to just simply extend to you a simple invitation, an invitation to imagine. I've been asking folks what they think of or what they think about God. What does God look like? And my 16-year-old and I were sitting down having a conversation, and I began the conversation with her. I've had it with a guy in his 20s, mid-20s, late-20s, and when I ask him, everybody says something like this. They say, God is big. I said, well, no, like, what does he look like? What does he look like? And then I'll ask a follow-up question, say, does he have hair? And everybody starts to go, yeah. So my 16-year-old and I were sitting down, and she said, he has hair. I said, well, what color is it? Well, it's white, and it's flowing. She said, you don't know what, Dad? She said, God looks like King Triton in Little Mermaid. But it's so funny because that's been like the universal picture that people have described when they talk about God. He's big, he's muscular, he's got long flowing white, he's kind of grandfatherly, but he's powerful enough to do something cool. And so this picture of God, and the reality is a lot of us have sort of carried this image of God, this picture of God for a long time. For a long time, we've never really rethought it or never really decided, can we really reimagine what God would be like? I love the whole concept of imagination. In fact, we were on vacation last week. We went to Disney World, and I still have my Magic Band on. I just can't let go of it yet. And because I love the idea of imagination. I love to think about things and express things or see how things might be or could be, and just let my mind go, let my imagination run. I love that. And so I want for you to do this, but I want us to do it in a very specific way, and it's more important than you can imagine. What we're gonna talk about is more important than you can imagine. When I was a kid, I've shared this before, but I grew up with a relationship with God. I'd grown up in the church. I was 7 when I asked Christ into my life, and over the course of my middle school, high school years, I was making decisions into college, making decisions that either I thought were gonna please God or I thought were gonna disappoint God. So there was at least a frame of reference to go, this is the decision that God's gonna be disappointed in, I'm gonna do it anyway. This is a decision that I think might be pleasing God. So I was aware of that. There was always this sense of fear, and this is what I've told you before, there was a sense of fear that God was gonna ask me to give up something that I really liked or enjoyed, or that God was gonna make me do something that I wouldn't like. And I stumbled on this verse in my quiet time. I remember underlining this. I was probably in the 10th grade or 11th grade. In 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 9, it says that no eye has seen, no ear has heard, no mind has conceived the things that God has in store for those who love him. I remember going, oh, I did what you said. Oh, yeah, that's so good. So my assumptions, it was this picture of me, and it says that no eye has seen, right? We'll give him a little mouth, some hair. No ear has heard, and no mind has conceived the things that God has for those who love him. And everybody has a picture of what this is. Everybody has a picture of what this is. So what happens is my assumption for us today, my assumption for every person here is that you have some thought about God. Even people who claim to be atheists, it isn't so much that they say God doesn't exist, although that's the definition, God doesn't exist. The rationale is that if God did exist, right, things wouldn't be like they are. Suffering wouldn't be here, this wouldn't be there. There's something that we believe about God that causes us to disbelieve him. Everybody here thinks something about God. You have some thought about him. The second part of my assumption is that you also have a thought about something that God should do. You have ideas about what God should do, about what you would do if you were God, right? When it comes to things like suffering in the world, when it comes to things like cancer, when it comes to all the things that plague us, we go, how could God allow this? Why doesn't God do something about this? And that in turn shapes what we think about God. We have this sort of this idea, and so it's just there, and most of us haven't really considered it since we came up with the image of Triton to describe God. We've not really considered it since then. We read the Bible, and those of you who do that, I commend you. That's a good thing. We read it to figure out how to make life work. We read it to figure out, like, let me get a nugget. Let me get something I can do. Let me get something I can put into my life today, something I can apply. All those are extraordinarily important. But to reimagine is more important than you can even imagine. This idea that no eye has seen, no ear has heard, no mind has conceived is more important than what you might know, because the things that we put in these boxes are exceedingly important. See, A.W. Tozer is famous for saying this: what comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. What comes into our mind when we think about God is the most important thing about us. Well, C.S. Lewis actually wrote this about 40 years prior to that quote from A.W. Tozer, and C.S. Lewis said this. He said, I was reading in a periodical the other day. He was speaking this. I read in a periodical the other day, the fundamental thing is how we think about God. By God himself, it is not. How God thinks of us is not only more important, but infinitely more important. Indeed, how we think of him is of no importance, except insofar as it is related to how he thinks about us. So what I want you to do is I want you to kind of get loose for just a second, and I want you to take a deep breath, and I want you to close your eyes. Now I want you to imagine God. Just imagine him. Just real quick. And now, what emotion do you immediately feel? What emotion comes to mind? What do you feel when you think about God? I've heard descriptions is, when I think about God, I think about him holding me by sort of the scruff of my neck or by the seat of my pants over a fire. And if I pray the right prayer, then he'll let me go, or he'll bring me back to himself. But if I don't, he's going to let me go. Some of you have had images or visions of God or emotions of God that typically conjure or bring about shame or guilt or disappointment, right? Most of our emotions associated with God aren't joy and peace and freedom. It's usually something we haven't done enough. In fact, if you ask someone, how's your prayer life? You know what most people answer? I don't pray enough. How's your giving? I don't give enough. How's your church attendance? I don't attend enough. Everything always has to do with this sense that we have disappointed God, that somehow we see him as being fundamentally disappointed in us. And that brings about emotions. It causes emotions to stir. And we've never reimagined, we've never thought about what does it look like to actually see God as he is and how he would respond to you and to me. And this is important because it's going to get us out of this sort of grind that we call life. It's more important than you might know. The way I think about this is that we imagine God in the image of the things that we worship. We imagine God in the image of the things that we worship. And it happens because it really drives our prayer life. It drives a lot of things. Even those of us who have been walking with God, it drives a lot of the things that we think about or pray about or ask God for. Is we're trying to get him to do what we would do if we were God. And we appeal to him. God, this would be awesome for you. We sort of have this view of him. And what I want us to do is to get above this. It says that no eye has seen, no ear has heard, no mind can conceive. We can't get our minds around this, or has conceived. We can't get our minds around this. I want us to look at this passage a little bit more deeply and see if we can make some observations about it. As I read this, I went back, and what I do is whenever I'm reading my Bible and I'm really kind of perplexed or I've got questions, I print it off on a sheet of paper. Then I get out my colored markers, my colored pencils, because I'm ADD like that, and I start to just make observations. And I notice at the beginning of this chapter, or the beginning of this book in 1 Corinthians, it says that God has chosen the foolish things to shame the wisdom of the world. God decided that it would be fun to take all the stuff that we think we're so smart and just make it seem like nothing. Right? He's chosen the foolish things to shame the wise. Things like using a cross to bring life. Right? He's chosen the foolish things of the world to shame the wisdom of the wise. He starts to talk about these two different ways of seeing the world. I just made some observations. And what I realized that the context of this is that we have to have a new perspective. Our perspective from here is simply not enough. You cannot, our minds don't conceive, our eyes don't see, our ears don't hear. We can't do it from where we are. We need something else to happen. So we read this passage and Paul is talking about, I'm sharing this message with you based on sort of what I believe about you and what I think God longs to do in you. And here's how he says it in verse 6 of chapter 2, the book of 1 Corinthians. We do, however, speak a message of wisdom among the mature. So he's seeing something in us, but not the wisdom of this age, or by the rulers of this age, or of the rulers of this age, who are coming to nothing. No, we declare God's wisdom a mystery. We're declaring God's wisdom a mystery that has been hidden and that God destined for our glory before time began. So he's talking about this idea that there's a mystery that we are looking towards, that we are trying to unfold or see or get our heads and hearts around. And he says, none of the rulers of this earth or this age had understood it. For if they had, they would have not have crucified the Lord of glory. However, it is written, and he's quoting from Isaiah chapter 64, what no eye has seen, what no ear has heard, what no human mind has conceived, the things that God has prepared for those who love him. Now, my question to you is, what are those things? When you look, it's gone. When you look at this verse, the last sentence, the things God has prepared. What are the things that God has prepared? Everybody has a picture of this. Everybody has a picture of this. Like for me, when I was in college or in high school and I was like trying to do all the right things, it was like, oh, that God would reward me with all this big, cool stuff. These are the things that God has prepared for me. If I love him now, he's gonna give me this stuff later. Or maybe it was just like heaven. It's like something far out there that God, you know, I can't believe, imagine heaven, so I just have to trust that's okay. Those are okay things. They bring comfort to me. They may bring comfort to you. I don't think it's what he's talking about. He says that somehow that there's this perspective that we need that we don't have, and there's something, that mystery that has been revealed for us to see and behold, that we could sort of glory in it. We could bask in it. We could embrace it. And we understand what glory in something is, right? This is why some of you are in a great mood today and some of you are in a bad mood today. Because our glory was either fulfilled last night or it was crushed last night. In case you don't know, you're probably an NC State fan, right? But for the rest of us, it was a big day for the Blue Devils. I know. It's, listen, I'm not trying to, so it's just 1-1, so we're good, right? But I'm just saying though, you had no problem. Most of you, if you were like involved in that, you started wearing your colors early in the morning. I saw videos and stuff on YouTube and or Instagram and Snapchat of people with their whole repertoire going through the whole pre-games in their house by themselves. Like, we understand what it is to see and behold and glory in something. And what Paul has said is that we are designed, human beings, our hearts are designed to glory in this mystery that's revealed. So what is it? And this is how I want us to look at this. And I've been thinking about this because for a long time, and what we do is this verse brought me hope because it meant that there was something coming that would sort of pay back or be a retribution for what I sacrificed here on this earth. That's how it felt. God, I'm gonna give up this now and I have no idea what you have for me later. So I'm gonna do this now so I can get something later. And what my mind would do is it always had to do with sort of his goodness and my satisfaction. And that's probably how you feel, right? God's, he's got things prepared for you that you cannot imagine. You're thinking things that are good and that are for my satisfaction. And then you try to conceive in your mind what those things are. And what he is saying is your mind is not going to conceive it from the perspective that you have. So I began to look at this, and there are three things I think that are really important for us to understand about what are these things. Look at what it says the next verse. It says that God has prepared for those who love him. These, in verse 10, these are the things that God has revealed to us by his Spirit. These things are not going to come because you think about them, because you try to understand them from your perspective. They're going to come when you say, God, can you show me what these are? Can you show me what these are? They come to us by his Spirit revealing them to us. And there are three things that I think these things encompass. The things that we cannot see, the things that we do not see, the things that we do not hear, and the things that we cannot imagine or do not imagine revolve around these three things. I'm gonna put them right here. Number one is we cannot conceive or we do not conceive the way in which God would reveal himself. We do not conceive how God would reveal himself. The heavens declare the glories of the Lord. And day after day, it pours forth his speech. We look at this. There are scientists who look at this intensely, and they understand it. They create formulas and mathematical equations so we can solve problems. I took physics in college, lots of physics in college. I've seen all the formulas. It broke it down to where I could understand. We talked about things like the speed of light. We talked about things like light years, right? We just go, oh, yeah, a light year. A light year is the length of time that light travels in 1 year. Everybody knows that, right? Do you know how far a light year is? Light travels at 186,000 miles per second. 186,000 miles per second. And we say, oh, a light year is how far that travels over the course of a year. Like, we have any idea what that really is? We have no idea. You can draw it, you can do an equation about it, you can use it in formulas, E equals MC squared, you can do all that stuff, but it doesn't give you the perspective of what, like, God, this is the stuff God toys with. He plays with this, light. Let there be light, first thing. He reveals himself. Do you realize that right now, today, in Australia, they're called grass cutter ants. I've been watching a lot of Planet Earth, it's amazing. Grass cutter ants. These ants live in Australia, and they live in a region where the grass is too thick and brittle for any of the vegetable eaters to eat, so it just grows out of control. So these ants are there, and they have little sharp sort of things on their face, and they just cut the grass, and they drop under the ground, and they carry stalks of grass probably 30, 40, 50 times their height. And so what you see is these millions of ants carrying this grass. Just like in line, they go into the tunnel, they have these cameras that they've put inside the tunnel, and we watch them. Now, the ants can't eat the grass. They can't eat the grass. So what they have to do is they take the grass into their tunnel where there's some moisture because it's in the desert, and the grass, they take it down into the tunnel where there's moisture, and they put the grass on these mounds, and it forms fungus so they can eat. Like, what? Like, it's happening right now. Millions, millions, billions of them. And there's another animal that comes along. He's got these claws and a big long snout, and his tongue is 3 feet long. And he jams it in there and goes, boom, and he eats a whole bunch of ants. And this happens all the time. You watch these things, and it is unbelievable. I don't know what I just did. It is unbelievable to think about this, to think about this. My point is that that God has revealed himself to us in ways that our minds do not conceive. I'm going to talk more about this in a minute. The second thing is that God, that these the things that we don't see or hear or imagine are the way in which God saves us, the way he brings salvation. I'll tell you how I would bring salvation to someone who offended me. When my oldest daughter was about 4, we were at a baseball game. I was sitting on the top bleacher. She was kind of bored at a baseball game, if you can imagine that. And so she was sitting down, playing in the dirt right below me. And so I'm sitting there kind of keeping an eye on her because I'm in charge of her. She's my kid, and so that's what I'm doing, watching the game, watching her. And this other boy, probably 6 or 7 years old, comes up and he starts to befriend her, and he's going to play with her. And I couldn't tell exactly what was going on. And I look at her, and all of a sudden I see him start to say something to her, and I couldn't tell what he was saying. And he reached over, and he took sand, and he kicked it in her face. Let me tell you what, I came down from my throne right where I was. I entered into that world, but it was not. It was to bring salvation to her, and it was about to look much different than God's salvation. See, when we do it, we go in and we just whoop everybody. Anybody who bothers us, we whoop. God sends his son to die. Our minds don't conceive that. Our eyes don't see that. That's not from our perspective. The way in which God has gone about saving us is drastically. This is the mystery that he's talking about. And then the third thing is the way in which God redeems the life that he created and the life that he still intends. I want to be really clear. What our minds can't conceive, what our minds don't conceive, what we don't get from our own wisdom without submitting ourselves and seeing him, is we don't understand, we will not understand his intention to redeem the life that he created and the life that he still intends for you. His intention is not going to, he still intends it for our world, for you and for me. He intends for that to happen, and he is working redemption to have that. And we've got to begin to see things differently because our eyes can't see those things from the perspective that we currently have. Without the Holy Spirit, without God's work in our lives, we don't see them. So what God did for us is he sent for us his son. You've seen this. He sent, and the way it's described is it's a container, right? It's a container. And he's given us a picture, a view. And if you read Colossians, it says like this, that God caused, intended, created, established the fullness of all of his deity, of all of his godness. And he squeezed it into a little bitty living space, right? Like Aladdin, he just squeezed it into Jesus. So all of his glory, the fullness of who he was, he squeezed into this man named Jesus. That's what it says in Colossians. He goes on and talks about he was before all things. He holds all things together. It's just this list. Read Colossians 1 if you want to get your eyes up. And in John 1, it's one of my favorite descriptions. It says it like this. It says, and the word became flesh and dwelt among us. And many of you have heard that passage. The word became flesh and dwelt among us. There was a container that God sent for us to see some things. And then the word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we have seen his glory. Glory as full of the only begotten Son from the Father, full of grace and full of truth. The Word became flesh. Now, the idea is not the Bible became flesh. The idea is the Word. The Word is logos. That means an embodying idea. It means it's something that you see that is reflective or expressive of something much larger than itself. When you write B-O-O-M, it's not boom. I guess that's a boom crane, but it's like boom, right? It embodies something bigger. It's bigger than just that. So what Jesus is, he's the Word became flesh. He embodied him in flesh. And he says that we see this container and he's full, the fullness of God. It's in this man named Jesus and he's full of grace and he's full of truth. Full of grace and full of truth. Now, real quick, there are probably a couple different kinds of people in this room. There are people, when you think about Jesus being full of grace and full of truth, you're like, yeah, baby, give me some truth. That was your first, you're like, oh. And there are others of you in here, and you're like, oh, I like some grace. And what we've done is we sort of created an image of God based on what we perceive without actually looking at what he has said to us. We can't see how he's revealed by trying to understand him from our perspective. We can't see what he did to bring us salvation, deliverance from our perspective. We can't understand the life that he has called us to live from our perspective. What we do is we try to understand truth, I think a lot of people do, by sort of breaking it down into its components. We take and we try to understand the truth by breaking it down into its components. Did y'all get that? Into its components. And then we try to create the right systems and doctrines and things that we can control and educate and instruct and then make everybody do what we want them to do. And it loses something in this. It loses something. Our capacity, our drive to understand things is often driven in terms of let's get something big, let's break it down into its smallest parts, and then we'll understand it. Right? We talk about kindergartners do this with the water cycle. They go, oh, it's the water cycle, right? There's a lake, and there's evaporation, and then it goes into the sky, and there's condensation, and then it falls, and it's precipitation, and it's like, oh, we draw it on a little thing, it makes perfect sense. And we understand it, we can teach it, we can check, we learn things about science and physics stars and planets, and we pass tests. We can make a good grade on the chemistry test, we can make a good grade on our physics test, we can make a good grade, and we've reduced it so we understand it. But I don't think that's what God is after, right? I mean, I do this. This is my discipline. I love to watch the sunrise, right? Sunrise. The sun comes up. People take pictures of this every day. Sunrise. Ooh, sunrise. Tweet it out, text it out, Instagram, whatever. Sunrise. And it's an extraordinary, beautiful thing. But we go, the sun goes up, the sun comes down. And we can sort of understand it until you think about it. A sunrise. What you're doing as you're standing on the edge of a continent, the very edge of a continent, and you're standing on a ball of rock in the middle of space, tilted at 23.5 degree axis, spinning at 1,000 miles an hour as it zings around a ball of fire 93 million miles away. And you're just waiting. You're waiting on this 1,000 mile an hour rotation to go fast enough so you can see a ball of fire 93 million miles away. Like, what? Right? Think about how we do things. Like, when you think about it's evaporation, condensation, precipitation, nothing says that there are billions and billions and billions of gallons of water just floating in the sky. It's just there. And you can tell me about dust particles. It doesn't explain, though, like, there's a more efficient way to water stuff, right? This is what God does. This is what God does. I mean, we build a dam of water, and we put tons and tons and tons of concrete to hold back a lake, and God's like, I'm going to hold back oceans with sand you can run through your fingertips. Do you ever just marvel about that? Do you ever just stop and go, I can't believe this holds back all that? Y'all, this is what I'm talking about. When we see things, we don't break it down so we understand. I understand truth, and here's part one, part two, part three, and now I understand it all. We understand it in such a way that causes or compels us to worship. I've come to believe this may be the most important thing that we need to learn how to do, that we've forgotten how to do. We are wired to worship. We are wired for it. I stood up so easy last night. Right, as soon as Duke came out, I'm in front of the TV this far. A friend of mine, right next to me, he's rooting for Chapel Hill, standing right next to me. I'm trying not to rub him. I'm just like, I mean, you can just feel it. We are wired for this. It's why we watch Animal Planet, why we send scientists out there with British accents to go, this is the copyright, because we marvel. You never notice that every one of them are British accents? We are wired. Human beings are wired to marvel. And look at what this next thing. So you have Jesus. He's full of grace and full of truth. And I think this is really interesting. Two verses later in verse 16, it says this. And from his fullness, from all that he is, what we get to drink is grace upon grace. So the thought about this, I thought, is that just clever? Is that just a clever way for John to go, you know, Jesus is full of grace and truth and we get grace upon grace? Or maybe it is because God hasn't trusted us with truth apart from Jesus. Maybe because we don't get to decide and understand and dissect truth from him, because there's something more compelling about truth that requires something else in order for us to see it. Otherwise we reduce and diminish. Otherwise we reduce and we demystify, and it causes us to feel more in control and more superior because we are at the top of the food chain and we understand more than everybody else understands. And what God wants to do is to look at these grass cutter ants and marvel, go, who in the world thought of this? He wants us to see things and it expands. That's what understanding means. The very word understanding means that it brings a view. It brings something into whole, into picture. And this all stems on how we see God. Out of the fullness of Jesus, we don't get truth. We don't receive truth. We get grace upon grace upon grace upon grace. Why? Everybody knows what truth does. If you need to have a conversation about truth with your kids, it's easy. You sit them down, son, daughter, whatever you call your girl. My dad called me seven. Oh, daughter, it doesn't sound right. Kid, ma'am, whatever. And you say, here's the truth. And what you begin to do is you begin to create these charts, maybe not on paper, but they're charts. And there's right and there's wrong, and there's good and there's bad. There's you should have done and you didn't do. And here's truth and here's untruth or lies or faults or whatever. And you begin to separate those things. And it's very understandable. We want to make sure that those are all important things. But truth is always about dissecting and minimizing. If you bring truth to your relationship with your children, or truth in your marriage, or truth into your workplace, we all know what that looks like. You're breaking things down. You're giving people, you're incising and separating, and those are all important things. Please don't hear me saying that truth doesn't matter. It's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that's not what we receive from the fullness of God. What we receive is grace upon grace. Now, what does grace do? How do you bring grace in a relationship with your kids? Guess what just happened to your vision? It didn't get smaller. It got bigger. When you bring grace into the workplace, and you try to figure out how to bring grace into a relationship that's strained, when you bring grace into the world around you, how do you do that? It begins to look very differently. It always expands. It always causes us to see differently. And it's the perspective that we need. Because what we do is when we realize we got grace from God, it causes us to marvel. And something happens in our hearts. And when that happens in our hearts, guess what we get? We get Jesus. And he is the truth. These are not separate. You just can't approach them in the way that you've always approached them. Our minds don't conceive them. I thought of this. It doesn't say can't comprehend. It says we don't. We need his perspective. We need him. We get grace upon grace. And so here's what I want us to close with. Here's how I want us to think about this. The hard thing about this message and the hard thing about this series is that you're going to go, what do I do? How is this applicable? I'm off replying to the Bible. What I've learned, and I'm going to talk more about this, is that I read the Bible to study it. I study the Bible a lot. I study it to prepare messages. I study it for application. I study it to gain insight. What I've started doing is to read God's word in order to see, to imagine God. You see, Psalm chapter 34, verse 3 says, O come and magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. There's songs about that. It's actually a song in the Bible. What does magnify the Lord mean? You can take something that is really small and magnify it and blow it up to make it look way bigger than it is. That's one way to magnify things, and that would be blasphemy if you do that with God. Let's take this little view of God that we understand. Let's blow them up so we can actually see it. That's what we're doing when we incise things. We're taking all these little nuggets and we're trying to put them together so we can see something that we can't see because it seems too small to see. But you can also magnify things like a telescope. You send the Hubble telescope out into space thousands and thousands and thousands of miles to take pictures of things light years away. And what does it take? Something that is so enormously massive, and it allows you to be able to see just a little bit of it. To magnify God is to lift up Jesus because he is the embodiment of that. When we look at him, God should get bigger. When is the last time you have seen him this way? He's not a grandfather. When's the last time you've seen him this way? What I mean, what I intend is this really is an invitation to imagine, to lay aside what you think about God and instead imagine. This is not blasphemous. I'm not asking you to reject God. I'm asking you to consider reimagining what you've always seen. I've done this. I look at this and I said, I've always gravitated toward Jesus as the truth. I love that part of Jesus. But I began to realize that I don't receive grace and truth from him. I receive grace upon grace upon grace upon grace. What does that mean to me? How do I see him like this? This is the invitation in the Bible, right? It says to fix our eyes upon Jesus, who is the author and the perfecter of our faith. What does it mean to fix our eyes? I'm inviting you to imagine that. That's what I'm asking you to do. Let's do this together. I want you to imagine for just a moment the deepest desires of your soul being filled. The deepest parts of who you are being filled, satisfied fully. I want you to imagine the burdens of your heart, the things that you feel so deeply and passionately about. Maybe they're in your own life, in your own family, your own world, or maybe they're in the world around you, something that's going on that just burdens your heart. I want you to imagine those burdens being held and honored and redeemed. Imagine if God wanted those things as badly as you did. I want you to imagine the deep longings that you have, the places that are way down deep where they're actually fairly pure. Maybe they're not touched yet by pride and all the things. You just really want some things that you believe are, and it's just God's image stamped way down inside of you. Imagine longing for peace or for justice, for wholeness, for fullness. Now imagine a God who cared as much about those things as you do. When's the last time you've imagined him like that? He doesn't care about those things because it makes the world we live in a better place. He cares about those things because those are the very image of who he is. Imagination is simply to form an image. That's all it is. To imagine something is simply to form an image. If you think about this, that we are made in the image of God, we actually become his imagination. It's kind of a cool thing to think about. I want you to imagine that all these things that you really long for in a God, imagine if that's who he actually was. What if the God that you have imagined is actually who he really is, and you just never had eyes to see because your eyes can't see, your mind can't conceive, your ears can't hear, and you need something to happen in here. The reason this is so important, because my own journey with this has been kind of interesting. I'm a practical, I like graphics, I like charts, I like things to fit together, I like the complete puzzle, I like those things like that. And over the years, I focused a lot on personal formation, personal development, discipleship. I focused a lot on strategy and mission and how we leverage our lives in the kingdom. So we've been looking at this in the life of our church. We realize that there's another category of pursuit, of us pursuing God simply because he's God, to worship. I don't know about you, but I looked at my own life, and worship was kind of missing. It was kind of missing because I come here on Sunday morning, right? That's what we do. We come in, we worship. But I'm just like, I got a message to write. I got a message. You know, this is not always easy. It's like an algebra test. You don't want it to tip out of your head too soon or else it'll all be gone. And so I come in here and I'm like, focus on message. And I realize that we have worship leaders standing on our stages leading us in songs. I'm sitting back there by the TV or back behind the stage. And I realize that they're leading me too. And I haven't stopped. I'm consumed with what I have to teach and preach and communicate. I want to be clear on all those things. But I've forgotten that my heart just needs to be in awe of God for a few minutes when we say, I'm no longer a slave to fear or whatever it is we sing. So what you've got to do something about this. And this is not easy, and it's not going to be practical. It's not going to fit. I'm telling you, you're going to have to go somewhere you're not used to going. Maybe go and sit down and at the beach and just think about the fact that God holds this back with sand and just begin to let your imagination, just begin to imagine God. You're not going to do this in a hurry. You're not going to do this, you know, on the way to somewhere else. You're going to have to really get let yourself go. I've been listening to more and more worship music in my own personal world. I put my headphones in. I get in my office. I shut the door. I have two doors in my office. I shut both of them, and I sing loud. Sometimes I raise my hand. Sometimes I actually get on my face. I get on my knees in my office. So people walk in and say, what happened to Mike? We're not going to bother him. But you've got to do whatever works for you to get your eyes on him. You have to do this. This is the only way our hearts are ever going to come alive. Your heart will never come alive because you understand the doctrines about God. They're only going to come alive when you see him as he is. I want you to imagine God. I want you to imagine God not as the grandfather who makes you feel good about things or the genie who meets your wishes. I want you to imagine a God who is worthy of your worship. Y'all, as soon as they walked out on the court last night, I was sitting there, I was all, I have my Duke hat on. As soon as they walked out, I was like, yes! As soon as they walked out. When's the last time you've seen God that made you get out of your seat? That moved you? And even worse, you know what's going to happen at the end of all this, right? No matter how big the church you built is, or how many people you've affected, no matter how much money you've made, how many accomplishments you have, every great thing you've done in this world, when you see Jesus, full of grace and full of truth, you're going to take every good thing you've ever done and you're just going to lay it at his feet. And if we're really honest, we probably won't even be able to stand. I want you to imagine that God. I want you to imagine that God. When your heart is compelled by him for who he is, I believe it will set the course for changing everything else. So come, let us magnify the Lord together. Let's pray. God, my request in this moment is very simple. You have demonstrated your righteousness, you have demonstrated your love, in the fullness of your son, Jesus. We have looked at him, we have studied him, we have picked apart his teachings and his doctrines, but God, let us look at him. Our risen Savior, our coming King, full of grace and full of truth. God, we extend our hands and from him we receive grace upon grace upon grace upon grace. God, my prayer is that you would help us to see you somewhere today, tomorrow, in some way that causes us to stand, to be in awe, to be moved. God, our hearts were made to worship. There's a lot of things that catch our attention here on this earth. And God, my hope and my prayer is that you would be top of that list. God, I ask this according to the power that you've given us through the blood of your Son, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit. And I ask this in the name of your Son. Amen. Hey, thank you guys so much for being here today. We'll be down front if we can help out. We'd love to do that. And we'll see you guys next week. Okay, thank you. Hey.
From the corners of my deepest shame, the empty places where I've worn your name, show me the love. I say I believe.